Don't give up comfort for style. Mack Weldon's Ace Collection makes it effortless to look good while feeling comfortable. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25.
Today we explore the final two songs from the Hobbit movies, I See Fire from The Desolation of Smaug and The Last Goodbye from The Battle of Five Armies. A couple of episodes ago, we looked at the songs from the first Hobbit film, An Unexpected Journey. So today we're going to finish that up. We're going to wander deep into these lyrics, but remember, just because you wander doesn't mean you're lost. Before we get started, please rate or review this episode if you're liking the show. Every 5-star rating helps more Middle-earth wanderers find our community. And remember to share this episode with a friend. Now, let's wander. Okay, so first on our list is I See Fire from The Desolation of Smaug, the second Hobbit film. This song was written and performed by Ed Sheeran. And I don't know if anybody gave Ed Sheeran any lessons in Lord of the Rings lore or Tolkien, or if he's an actual big Tolkien fan. I actually have no idea. As I really dug deep into these lyrics, I was really blown away by how connected they are with sort of the themes and the ideas that Tolkien presents in The Hobbit and the wider Lord of the Rings lore, including the Silmarillion. I have a couple of keys that I want to give you to help you understand the lyrics of the song a little bit deeper. Key number one is to look for transformative journeys as they are represented in the lyrics. For example, in the chorus, we'll see words that are describing more physical things, and those words gradually become more metaphorical. That's a bit of a transformative journey. There's also, across the whole song, we'll see that some things are rather distant, and then things become rather close. We also are going to look at a lot of if-then statements, right? So if something happens, then we hope that this thing happens. And those statements will gradually be reduced to actual realities where there is no more hypothesis, there is no more hope, there is no more if, they are actual realities. So that's key number one, look for those transformative journeys. And in fact, the most transformative journey that you can find in The Lord of the Rings, as you look at the grand scope of things, is a theme that Tolkien called fall, F-A-L-L, when species turn against the will and the intent of their creators. Now, in a letter to his publisher, Waldman, Tolkien summed up this theme, quote, "Anyway, all this stuff is mainly concerned with fall, mortality, and the machine. It has various opportunities of fall. It may become possessive, clinging to the things made as its own. The sub-creator wishes to be the lord and god of its private creation. He will rebel against the laws of the creator, especially against mortality." And we're going to see that in the dwarves. This song, I See Fire, really epitomizes the fall of the dwarves as they have fallen from the will of their creator, whether that is Aule, their actual creator, as we've covered in previous episodes, or Iluvatar, the one creator god who sort of adopted the dwarves in as their children. This song, I See Fire, sort of represents what happens when the dwarves have moved against that will, their natures, and have become too subjected into their own creations, into their own wealth, into their own power. So that's key number one, is look for the transformative journeys. Key number two is this: the first four lines of this song, and we'll get to this a little bit deeper in just a moment, but the first four lines of this song are a prayer that will keep getting referred to back throughout the rest of the song. That's why these lines are a little bit different. They're not really a chorus or a bridge. They are more like a preamble to the song. And they represent a prayer. And we'll see throughout the rest of the song that there are moments of hope that call back or activate that prayer as it is said in the beginning of the song. Okay, and key number three. It's always good to ask who is singing to whom and why. As we'll dig into these lyrics, I hope to sort of show you that the me here that is singing this song is Durin's son. Durin, of course, being the first dwarf father created by Aule, and Durin's son being represented in the Hobbit story as Thorin, the last great king of Durin's folk. Now, also, who is he singing to from Thorin's perspective, right? We'll see that in the very first line of the song. The song is being sung from Thorin's perspective to Aule as sort of the guardian, the creator of the dwarf species. Okay, so let's dig into this a little bit. Let's look at the first four lines of the song, which I am referring to as sort of a prayer. So the first line, O misty eye of the mountain below. Now, mountain, there's a clear on-the-surface reference of the lonely mountain that the dwarves are trying to reclaim. This was the home of Thorin and his father and grandfather, where they had great wealth and great power and prestige. But also, in the Silmarillion, the mountains are referred to as Aule's trees. So Aule, the creator of the dwarves, remember, he is one of the Valar, the guardians of Middle-earth, and he is their master craftsman. He is the one who is creating and building and crafting all of these wonderful and beautiful things, including the mountains. The mountains are Aule's creation. So this prayer begins by addressing, O misty eye of the mountain, right? I think that's actually in reference to, let's call this prayer out to Aule as our creator, who is supposed to be watching over us and keeping watch over Durin and his prosperity. That's really the second line there, right? Keep careful watch of my brother's souls. Now, in the third and fourth line, we see our very first instance of a sort of if-then statement. Okay, and this is the overall arching if-then statement. Should the sky be filled with fire and smoke, okay, so in other words, if there's fire and smoke, then keep watching over Durin's sons, right? So if there is fire and flame and smoke in the fate of the dwarves, then we hope that you will keep watching over us, right? That is our prayer to you, the Eye of the Mountain or Aule, that is our prayer to you. So then we get into verse number one. And verse number one, and what we'll see in actually almost all of the verses, and it's interesting when this changes, but in almost all of the verses, the first two lines, again, are one of those if-then statements. So verse number one, if this is to end in fire, then we should all burn together. Right there from the very beginning, they're looking at, okay, what's going to happen? How is this going to end? And if it is going to end in fire, then we're going to have some solidarity. We're all going to burn together. We're all going to go down together. And also, this verse is pretty distant. It's almost as if they're watching from afar. This is different in the film than in the book. In the book, Thorin actually explains that he was adventuring away from the mountain, and he saw the dragon attack from a distance. And so this verse actually really matches sort of that experience that Thorin gives. They're watching the flames climb higher out into the night. We're going to have to stand by as we watch the flames burn on the mountainside. It's something very, very distant. And yet that prayer is still activated. Remember, the prayer is, if we're going to end in fire, then please keep watching over us. So verse one is, we're ending in fire. We're going to be solidarity, but please activate that prayer. Please keep watching over us. Now we're going to dive into verse number two. And again, look, the very first two lines there of verse number two are one of those if-then statements. And this is a little bit more immediate than sort of the distance from verse one. In verse two, we get the, if we should die tonight, right? That immediacy, some urgency, then we should all die together. So we still have that idea of solidarity, except now it's a little bit closer to us. They're going to raise a glass of wine, which in most cases, wine is usually red. I'll say that because it's really interesting that Ed, as he's writing these lyrics, he never actually describes fire in any of its colors. He sort of uses some metaphorical language. So a glass of wine that's red. And we also had the word auburn just a couple lines before up there in verse one. We'll get auburn a couple more times. And that's sort of really the only actual description of fire. We're sort of using those metaphorical descriptions there. Okay, and again, we're going to activate that prayer in verse number two, right? So calling out to Father O, right? So they're going to call back to that beginning prayer. They're calling back to Aule as the father of the dwarves, who created the first seven dwarves. This verse also ends with the line, desolation comes upon the sky. Now, desolation is the word that Tolkien used to describe how Smaug had sort of left the land as Thorin and Bilbo and company are traveling through the land. He calls it the desolation of the dragon. And this, again, is not so distant, but a little bit more immediate. Desolation is coming upon the sky, right? We have a dragon who is now attacking the dwarves, and this dragon will leave nothing in his wake but desolation. Okay, now we get the first chorus. And notice in this chorus, there is no if-then statement. those are going to be in the verses. The verses kind of show that a little bit of hope, or maybe this will happen, maybe it won't. But in the chorus, not so much. Very first line, now I see fire. So there is no more if then. It is now. This is reality. This is actually happening. There is fire. Therefore, that prayer from the very beginning is now activated. We're asking for that blessing over Durin's sons to be watched over, to be kept over, to be guarded and protected. There's fire in the mountain. There's fire burning the trees, both very physical sort of things. But then we take one step into more of the metaphorical. I see fire hollowing souls. Hollowing, a word here, which means to deprive a soul of its essential elements for functioning. Probably in this case, a body. A soul needs a body to function, at least for the dwarves in Tolkien's mythology. And I see fire, but then we even get a little bit more metaphorical. Blood in the breeze, which I really like because that has a bit of a double meaning to it, at least from what I can see. Blood in the breeze is one way of describing flame and fire as it's going through the wind, right? Remember, the lyrics never come out and say that fire is red, but the lyrics are using these different words, right? Auburn, wine, blood in the breeze. So in one way, this is metaphorical in that the fire is going through the wind. But in another way, blood in the breeze, blood is not supposed to be in the wind. It's supposed to be in our bodies because we need blood to live, right? So blood in the breeze is another way of saying, you know, death has come upon the dwarves, right? So a little bit more metaphorical than those first physical lines. Again, that's one of those transformative journeys from the physical to the metaphorical. And then we get the last line of the chorus. I hope that you remember me. Go back to that prayer. Who is me? Me, in this case, is the representative of Durin's son, who is Thorin, the king of the dwarves at this time. We're hoping that the Aule, the creator of the dwarves, hoping that Aule will remember Thorin. We're trying to activate that prayer from the very first lines of the song. Okay, now we move on to the next verse. And we start again with another if-then statement. Should my people fall, or in other case, if my people fall, then I'll do the same. So again, my people are falling. There is an ending to my people, but solidarity. We're going to do this together. I will do the same. And we're going to do it as we're confined in mountain halls. We can't escape. That's another theme with dwarves as they get stuck in their mountains when enemies come. Interesting line here in this verse. We got too close to the flame. Then we're starting to get a little hint in that line of maybe the dwarves have fallen from the will and the laws of their creator. They're getting too close to the flame, maybe too close to something that they should not have. Maybe something that they've created that they're becoming too possessive of, or maybe something that they've found, aka the Arkenstone, that they don't want to give up. And again, we're still a little bit distant here. We're watching the flames burning on the mountain. So we're getting too close, but not so close. We're still in a little bit of a distance. Okay, chorus again. We get the same words, right? The physical to metaphorical journey. Fire on the mountain, fire in the trees, hollowing souls, blood in the breeze, the double meaning there. And again, the last line, I hope that you remember me, activating the prayer. And again, just a reminder that this is something that's very immediate. It's very present. There is no if-then statement. It's not theoretical. This is actual reality. Now we come to the bridge. And if we look very closely, here is sort of the key to understanding this whole song, right? Interesting enough, the bridge takes the pattern after the verses. It starts with an if-then statement. If the night is burning, then I will cover my eyes. Interesting. If the night is burning, I will cover my eyes. So all that we've seen before, if fire is going to come, if we're going to end, I'm going to do this solidarity, I'm going to do this all together. But here in the bridge, it's then I will cover my eyes. Sort of like I am trying to distance myself from this fiery fate that has come upon me and upon my people. And then we get another if-then statement. For if the dark returns, then my brothers will die. Thorin knows, or the speaker of this song knows, that as dark returns, the brothers will die. That goes all the way back to the first lines of the song, that opening prayer. If we're going to end, then please remember us. Please keep watching us. As the sky is falling down, it crashed into this lonely town. Again, there's a very literal interpretation of that, right? Like, smog is falling down. He's crashing into the lonely town, destroying it in his first coming, and really in his second coming before he dies by the arrow of Bard. And with that shadow upon the ground, I hear my people screaming out. So notice we've shifted. We've shifted from if-then statements to actual realities. So the bridge here is sort of taking the pattern of the verses being if-then statements, hypotheticals, and the chorus being actualities. This bridge has condensed that into a much tighter pattern. We have the if-then statements, but now it's actual realities. The sky is falling down. It's crashing down on the town. It's cascading. It's crushing all the things below it. The shadow is here. Shadow is often a word used in Lord of the Rings to reference those things that are evil. And the singer of this song hears his people screaming out. There is no if-then statement there. This is an actual reality. His people have come to an end. Now we get to the final chorus. And again, there's no if-then statement, right? Now I see fire inside the mountains, burning the trees, hollowing souls, blood in the breeze. And then we get to the closing sort of refrain here. First line, I see fire. So there is no hypothetical. There is no more hope. This is actual reality. There is no if-then statement. Oh, you know, I saw a city burning, right? So past tense. This is now something in the past. There is no more hope to remember. Fire is burning everything down. And it is no longer something distant, right? We're not watching fire on the mountain or on the trees anymore. It's something so close to us that we feel the heat upon my skin. That fire is not distant anymore. It has now become personal. So that is the final reality of the dwarves. Did they get too close to something and became possessive of something that they probably should have let go? And then the dragon came, burned them to fire. Be interesting to think that opening prayer, O misty eye of the mountain below, keep careful watch of my brother's souls. Should the sky be filled with fire and smoke, keep watching over Durin's sons. So we are. We're praying to Aule, the creator. The sky indeed was filled with fire and smoke. Did Aule honor this prayer? Did he keep the faith of the dwarves? Did he keep watching over Durin's sons? Well, I think that's maybe a debatable point. The Thorin and his company were able to come back. Smaug was defeated, although not by the dwarves' hands. And Thorin was able to reclaim the mountain of Erebor, but he lost his own life in the process, as well as Fili and Kili. And honestly, that is the first place that my mind goes to when I hear the words, keep careful watch of my brother's souls. Thorin was the uncle of Fili and Kili. They had a very tight relationship. Did Aule, the eye of the mountain, did he watch over their souls? I'm certain that he did, and that he helped them in a way that that only works in Middle-earth, right? Sometimes our hopes are not entirely honored in a timeline or in an exact way that we would like, yet I think this prayer still holds true. Misty eye of the mountain below, keep careful watch of my brother's souls. And I think that's perhaps a prayer that all of us could raise up in our own ways and in our own lives. So kudos to Ed Sheeran for these lyrics. Again, I have no idea what his depth of knowledge is in terms of Lord of the Rings and reading the lore or looking at Tolkien. I don't know if somebody sat down with him and said, hey, here's some major themes that we're going for. I'm sure somebody did. Peter Jackson, somebody said something. I give Ed Sheeran an A+ for these lyrics. I think they fit very well, perfectly as a song for the Lord of the Rings. Okay, let's take a very brief break, and when we get back, let's take a look at the last goodbye from the final Hobbit film. We'll be right back. We're not done yet. If you like this episode, please leave a review and share with your friends. And remember to subscribe if you haven't already. We'll be right back.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications. It's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results. Expert support. Lose more weight. Make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Weight Watchers. Watch it work.
Welcome back, Wanderers. Let's dig into the last goodbye from the third Hobbit film, The Battle of Five Armies. The Last Goodbye, written and performed by Billy Boyd. None other than Peregrin Took himself. Billy Boyd, great performer, great actor, wonderful, wonderful lyrics here that we'll dig into. Just a quick little piece of trivia. The song that Pippin sings in the courts of Minas Tirith in The Return of the King, they had it in the script, right? That Pippin was going to sing a song, but they didn't actually write the song. And Billy kind of saw that in the script, and he kind of went and looked at a couple things, did a little bit of research, and he actually wrote his own little song based off of some of the poems in the book. Home is behind, the world ahead. There are many paths to tread. He created that song, and when the time came to film the scene, they were like, oh no, we forgot about this song. And Billy says, well, here, I've got this thing. And he sings it, and Peter Jackson says, boom, let's go with it. And so they did. And they used Billy Boyd's song there in Return of the King. So I think it's very fitting here that as we look at the last Hobbit film, the very last song is written and performed by Billy Boyd. And again, similar to Ed Sheeran, I don't know Billy's his depth of knowledge in the lore, how much he's read. I assume he's read quite a bit because they were pretty big on that on the Lord of the Rings set. But again, I'm going to give Billy Boyd an A+ here on these lyrics. I think you'll see why. Okay, so the major theme of this song, obviously it's called The Last Goodbye. The major theme here is farewell, right? All good things come to an end. In fact, if I were to sum this up in a couple of words, I'd say there's sort of a resolve from this song. There is a peace in how things have fallen out in the journey and in the adventure and in the story. And they are all parting in friendship, right? And this comes from the very first lines of the song. As the snowflakes cover my fallen brothers. And clearly this song is from the Hobbit's perspective, right? From Bilbo's perspective. And so to know that Bilbo is considering the dwarves his fallen brothers, he had all the reason to not. I mean, Thorin was pretty angry with Bilbo there towards the end, but they did have a moment of reconciliation before Thorin died. And so Bilbo was looking at this as fallen brothers, right? And brothers is a relationship. It's a bond even more than just simple friendship. If you look at Thorin and Bilbo, they started out as sort of employer and employee with a contract, and then they sort of became friends. And then here at the end, Bilbo is considering them his fallen brothers, right? And now he will say his last goodbye. Night is falling, so ends this day. The road is now calling, and I must away. Now, as I read these things, I feel like there's a sense of wandering here. The road is calling. The road is almost a entity unto itself that has a will and a power of its own. It's sort of an actor in the fate of all of these characters. The road is calling, and I must away. I must abide by that call. In fact, that reminds me of the lyrics of This Wandering Day from The Rings of Power, another A+ song, in my opinion, and I did do an episode of that a few months ago, if you want to take a look at that. But anyway, some of these lines come directly from, with a little bit of tweaks, but come from poems in The Lord of the Rings. So, over hill and under tree, under cloud and beneath the stars, over snow and winter's morn, I turn at last to paths that lead home. Again, these lines are pretty much lifted from The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. And maybe with a tweak to, a word or two here or there, they come right in here. And so that's why I think this song as a whole really feels like it is the music of Middle Earth. This song feels like it fits, right? It blends, it harmonizes with everything else that we know about Middle Earth. And I think a lot of that is due to these lines that come directly from Tolkien's words. And they're very natural. Under cloud, beneath stars, silver streams, snow and winter's morn. These are very natural type of of descriptions, very natural things. And that was a big theme for Tolkien. He was very big into describing the nature of where the characters were walking and where the story was taking place. But that is a big theme for Tolkien, describing the nature, getting out of nature. There's some key lines here in the chorus. I turn at last to paths that lead home, and though where the road then takes me, I cannot tell. Even at home, the road is still going to call this wanderer. The road will continue calling. The road will continue on. The road goes ever on and on, even after we've returned home, right? There's always some other call to adventure. More on that in just a moment. Let's take a look at the next verse. Many places I have been, many sorrows I have seen. Sorrows, that is a key word to understand Tolkien's works. That is a key theme that through sorrow, through challenge, and through grief, that is how these characters grow. That is how they overcome evil. That is how good conquers. It's not an absence of sorrow. It's not an absence of challenge or problems. It is only by suffering through that sorrow and rising up to meet it with your friends that evil can be overcome. And again, we get a little bit more solidarity, right? I don't regret, nor will I forget all who took that road with me. Again, that bond more than friendship. We are now brothers. If we come back to the chorus, there's more language here, more language that is closing a finality, right? Night is falling, the day is ending, we must away. So we get back to this idea of all good things come to an end. We've had a great journey. We've had a wonderful adventure, but all those things must end because the road is now calling. We get to the bridge, and this is where some of the key takeaways of the song come, right? To these memories, I will hold. With your blessing, I will go. We're parting in friendship. We're bonding in brotherhood. To paths that lead home. But again, home is a place where the road can still call you from. There's still adventures to be had, still explorations to embark upon. Where the road takes me, I cannot tell. But we came all this way. Now comes the day to bid you farewell. And what kind of a farewell? I bid you all a very fond farewell. So again, that theme of all good things come to a close. Or do they? Now, this is a really interesting thing in the world of Tolkien. There is a song in The Hobbit, as Bilbo is returning to the Shire. He sees his home for the very first time, and suddenly, as if the words seem to pop into his brain, he sings the song, "Roads go ever on and on, over rock and under tree, by caves where never sun has shone, by streams that never find the sea." And it goes on. But this song is repeated several times throughout The Lord of the Rings, right? That the road goes ever on and on. There's another instance in which when Bilbo is leaving his home in the Shire, in the Fellowship, as he's making his way to Rivendell, he again sings a version of this song, right? The road goes ever on and on, out from the door where it began. Frodo, as he is in the process of leaving the Shire, he also sings a version of this song. And afterwards, as he does, Pippin sort of asks him, like, "Hey, is that something you wrote, or is that something that Bilbo wrote?" And Frodo says, "You know, I don't know. It came to me then. This song of the road going ever on seems to just appear in Bilbo's mind and in Frodo's mind." And I'm going to read a paragraph here from The Fellowship of the Ring. Parts of this were actually used in the Fellowship movie, so it may sound familiar. This is Frodo talking to Pippin, referring to Bilbo. If you can keep that all straight in your brain, then you get an A+. Anyway, quote, He used often to say there was only one road, that it was like a great river. Its springs were at every doorstep, and every path was its tributary. It's a dangerous business, Frodo, going out of your door, he used to say. You step into the road, and if you don't keep your feet, there's no knowing where you might be swept off to. Do you realize that this is the very path that goes through Mirkwood, and that if you let it, it might take you to the Lonely Mountain, or even further and to worse places? He used to say that on the path outside the front door at Bag End, especially after he had been out for a long walk. I really love this idea. And in fact, this theme, as it's articulated here, is really one of the things that intrigues me the most about The Lord of the Rings, is the interconnectedness of everything. It's represented here by the road. If you go stand on your doorstep, whether you live in a house or an apartment or in a car, I don't know where you live, but if you stand on your doorstep and you think, this path connects to that road that connects to that road that connects to that road, all of these places are interconnected, and it's these roads that we travel that sort of bring everything together. You could go from Bag End to Mordor just by stepping out of your door. In fact, that's exactly what Frodo's going to do. He's going to leave Bag End and go to Mordor. Luckily, Bilbo got to go to the Lonely Mountain. But this interconnectedness of the roads is really intriguing and fascinating to me, this theme in The Lord of the Rings. But this theme of the roads and their interconnectedness and their going ever on, I think is actually a metaphor for another theme in the world of Tolkien and The Lord of the Rings. And that particular theme is that not only do roads go ever on, but the tales and adventures also are interconnected and go ever on. Like, for example, I really love this passage as Sam and Frodo are climbing. This is in the chapter, The Stairs of Cirith Ungol from the Two Towers. And Sam is sort of reminiscing about all the different tales that he has learned thus far. This is where, you know, they get that line from the movie of, I wonder if we'll ever be, you know, put in songs or tales. Sam says this to Mr. Frodo. Quote, Baron now, he never thought he was going to get that Silmaril from the Iron Crown in Thangorodrim. And yet he did. And that was a worse place and a blacker danger than ours. But that's a long tale, of course, and goes on past the happiness and into grief and beyond it. There's that theme of sorrow as well that I was mentioning earlier. Anyway, continuing. And the Silmaril went on and came to Ayad Indil. And why, sir, I never thought of that before. You've got some of the light of it in the star glass that the lady gave you. Why, to think of it, we're in the same tale still. It's going on. Don't the great tales never end? And Frodo responds, No, they never end as tales. But the people in them come and go when their part's ended. Our part will end later. Or sooner. So I love this little reminiscing by Sam and Frodo as they're on the way to Mordor to destroy the One Ring, obviously doing the greatest task that any hobbits or really anyone in Middle-earth had done, really, in comparison to what Beren and Lúthien were able to do. And, you know, Frodo's response, right? The great tales never do end, but certain characters have different parts to play, and their parts will eventually end in that particular tale or that particular adventure. Now, I mentioned that this song, The Road Goes Ever On, it pops up four times, once in The Hobbit and three times in The Whole Lord of the Rings. In the final time, it's popped up again by Bilbo, who takes this song again and he changes it slightly. In every other case, the road is going ever on. You got to keep your feet because you're just going to wander through Middle Earth and you never know where you're going to be swept off to. All of these places are interconnected. There's even another song where around some pathway, there might be some new gate that I've never seen before. And I'll pass that today, but maybe on another day I'll come and go that way. Everything's interconnected. And yet in this last version of The Road Goes Ever On, Bilbo sings it like this. Quote, The road goes ever on, out from the door where it began. Now far ahead the road has gone. Let others follow it who can. Let them a journey new begin. But I at last with weary feet will turn towards the lighted inn, my evening rest and sleep to meet. And then Bilbo falls asleep. This is from the chapter Many Partings from The Return of the King. So this road, in many instances, this poem, this song, The Road Goes Ever On, it speaks to that interconnectedness of everything. But yet there is a part in our tales that comes to an end. There's a part where our contribution to the adventure is over and the story continues. The great tales never end, even though our parts in them may just do that. So the interconnectedness of roads and of tales and adventures, and yet it is the role and the great challenge and the call to adventure of every generation to take up the new challenge, to defeat evil in the way that it's encountered for them. For Bilbo, that was to find the One Ring and to overcome the dragon Smaug, survive the Battle of Five Armies. For Frodo, it was to destroy the One Ring and to challenge Sauron. For Galadriel and Gandalf and Elrond and the White Council, obviously they wanted to overcome Sauron as well. You think back to the first age of Middle-earth, you had great heroes like Fingolfin, who went and challenged Morgoth himself and had actual hand-to-hand combat with the Dark Lord himself. Every generation has its challenge. The tale continues. The road goes ever on and on. What is your part in this great adventure that we call life? What tales are you connected to? What roads have you found your feet on? Where will you go? What will you do with the challenge that is given you? Or that sparks in my mind the words of Gandalf, right? All we have to do is to decide what to do with the time that is given us. Now, I just totally butchered that line, so I hope you'll forgive me, right? But Gandalf, right? All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given us. And so, what will you do with the time that is given you? And for today, I bid you all a very fond farewell. Thanks for wandering Middle-earth with me today. I bid you all a very fond farewell. My friends, if you enjoyed this episode, let me know by subscribing, leaving a review, and sharing with your friends. Follow me on Facebook or Instagram at Lore of the Rings Podcast. For feedback on the show, please email me using the link in the show notes. Until next Thursday, remember, not all those who wander are lost.